Coming up.
You should have to engage the person and tell them, you are on my property, you are trespassing, and you need to leave. That was not the case.
For Vault Studios, I'm Reed Redmond.
And I'm Will Johnson. You're listening to The Daily Crime.
This week, investigators in Cook County, Illinois, announced that they've identified another victim of serial killer John Wayne Gacy.
Sheriff's officials say John Wayne Gacy killed 33 teen boys and young men in Chicago between 1972 and 1978.
And in Texas, a homeowner has been charged with murder 11 days after killing another man on his property.
All we know is he was unarmed. He was inside the car. The car was locked. We are getting very few information, like very little. The whole story, it doesn't add up to nobody.
It took 11 days for police in Martindale, Texas, to arrest Terry Turner, now charged with murder after he saw an unfamiliar car in his driveway, fired a shot through the window, and killed the driver inside. Will, tell us what happened back on October 11th.
Reed, here's what we know from our partner station KVU in Austin, Texas, also court records and police reports. This happened in Caldwell County, Texas. That's where Martindale is, about 30 minutes south of Austin. And according to police reports, Terry Turner, 65 years old, got up to use the bathroom early in the morning. It was around 3:30 or so. And he saw an unfamiliar car in his driveway. He went outside to confront the driver. Apparently, the driver started to pull off. Terry Turner fired shots, and it killed the victim, the driver of the car, 31-year-old Adil Dagogi, inside the car. Terry Turner called police and reported that he had killed a man. He actually told police at the time that he saw a gun, according to reports, but police did not find a gun in the car. So, again, that was on October 11th that Turner called police and reported this all having happened in the early morning hours.
Turner saw a car in the driveway and went out to confront the driver, Adil Dagogi. Dagogi started to leave when Turner shot him through the driver's side window. A detective said Turner, quote, intentionally and knowingly killed Dagogi.
What do we know exactly about what led up to this or why the victim, Adil Dagogi, was in the area and parked in this driveway?
You know, family and friends say that he was probably on his way home, that in fact he had been with his girlfriend earlier that night. He ended up at her house that was not too far away from where Terry Turner's house is located. He had left his girlfriend's house and was either stopping for directions or had stopped for some reason. We don't know exactly, but, you know, this was, again, in the early morning hours, and his girlfriend reports that he had been with her earlier that night before leaving his house, her house.
So we have a man who shot and killed someone, called 911, said he killed someone, and then is not arrested for 11 days. Fill us in on what happened during that window of time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was 11 days later that Terry Turner was arrested. Police reported that he was cooperative, turned himself in. He was released on bond, so he was in jail for only a few hours. But the family and friends of Adil Dagogi were obviously pretty upset. And, you know, they came out and spoke out about this, that it took 11 days for an arrest to be made.
It is a little bit of relief, but that itself raises more questions. Why was not he arrested the same day?
There has been some discussion in the news of Texas's version of the Stand Your Ground law, where, you know, basically if you're defending your property, you're not required to back down or retreat. We have not heard officially whether that would be used in this case, but that is certainly being discussed.
If this man is not found guilty of this, it's going to set a precedent that it's okay to just shoot anyone that steps on your property, and that's not the case.
Adil's girlfriend, Sarah Todd, and brother, Othman, both say justice would be served if Turner is found guilty, but they want this case to have a lasting impact.
If we have to change something, we need to change it so this doesn't happen anymore.
You should have to engage the person and tell them, you are on my property, you are trespassing, and you need to leave. That was not the case.
What else can you tell us about this 31-year-old man, about Adil Dagogi? Who was he?
You know, according to family and friends, just a really loving, good person. He was a financial analyst who came to the U.S. in 2013 to pursue higher education. He did that. He moved to Texas in 2019 to live near his brother and then moved to Austin, Texas a year later. His body will be flown back to Morocco, is our understanding, and there have been a number of vigils for him already. Adil Dagoghi's girlfriend describes him, again, as just a really kind, good person.
I don't know. It's just, you can't even put into words how much of a huge heart he had for everyone.
The Cook County Sheriff's Office in Illinois has announced that one of the remaining unidentified victims of serial killer John Wayne Gacy has been identified as Francis Wayne Alexander. Before we get into that, Reed, take us back to the 1970s. Where did this all begin for Alexander's family?
This goes back to 1975, and I'll mention that all this background information comes from reporting in the Associated Press, but 1975 is the last time his younger sister, Carolyn Sanders, saw Wayne as he went by. That was for his wedding, which took place that year. And then she heard from her brother in the fall of 1976. She says that she got a postcard from him that said, "I'll see you soon because I love you." And her hope was that that meant that he was going to be at the family Christmas later that year. But that didn't end up being the case. And as far as Sanders can remember, that postcard was the last time she ever heard from her brother Wayne, who would have been around 21 years old at the time.
So what then is this family thinking, as far as we know, as they go years and then decades without hearing from Wayne Alexander?
It sounds like they just kind of found a way to live with the uncertainty. They hoped, you know, he was making a choice to not get in touch with them, whatever his reason might have been for doing that, because that at least would have meant that he was safe. And beyond that, they avoided thinking about the alternative, that something bad could have happened to him. And in total, they would have to live with that uncertainty for more than 40 years. It's been 45 years at this point, the entire time hoping that he might call one day or show up at a family gathering. Carolyn Sanders told the AP that family members kept an eye on some genealogical sites and that she would even from time to time type his name into Facebook, hoping that something might come up, but it didn't.
And did the family ever go to police at any point along the way? And if so, did anything come of that?
They did. Alexander reportedly kept in pretty close contact with his mom as well. They talked every month, but those calls stopped in November of that year, with their last communication being about Wayne's birth certificate. He'd asked her to send it to California because he was trying to get a new job there. But then when he didn't call the next month, his mom contacted police in California. They reportedly went out to the address that they were given, didn't find him. And the mother thought that that would trigger a missing persons investigation, according to Carolyn Sanders, but it didn't actually do that. And that's kind of where that inquiry ended. We now know a little more information that Wayne Alexander didn't only stop communicating with his family, that pretty much the rest of his trail vanished around the same time. He didn't make much money in 1976, maybe suggesting that he only worked part of the year. And the last known record investigators were able to find was a parking ticket from January of 1976. And that was it up until just this past summer.
And so what happened then this past summer leading up to this week's announcement?
Well, the Cook County Sheriff's Office in Illinois, Cook County being where the city of Chicago is located, they were looking at a cold case in which they had unidentified human remains. And they didn't share this with the family at first when they first reached out, but this unidentified victim had been killed by John Wayne Gacy, who I'm sure many of our listeners know was a serial killer in the Chicago area who, throughout the 1970s, would lure boys and young men to his home and rape, torture, and kill them. Gacy was ultimately convicted of murdering 33 boys and young men, and the bodies of 26 of those victims were found in a crawl space under his home in the Chicago suburbs. Now, this particular victim was one of those 26. And last summer, the Cook County Sheriff's Office reached out to the family of Wayne Alexander to ask for DNA samples. And like I said, when they did that, they didn't mention Gacy's name, but the family started to connect some dots. This was a murder case involving a young man in the Chicago area in the 1970s. And so they started to fear the worst. And of course, it turned out that those DNA samples were able to help investigators confirm that Wayne Alexander was John Wayne Gacy's fifth victim and one of the 26 victims found in his home.
What have we learned about how Alexander might have crossed paths with Gacy, and how did investigators end up putting all of this together in contacting Alexander's family for a DNA sample.
So as far as I can tell, we don't have a great answer to that first question other than investigators have determined that Wayne Alexander moved to Chicago at some point in the mid-70s, and he lived in the same area as some of Gacy's other victims. And now Gacy was known to target hitchhikers or just people he saw out walking around, so that could certainly be the extent of it. As for the investigation, there were 8 victims of Gacy's that were buried before they could be identified. And back in 2011, the sheriff's office decided to exhume those bodies to try to figure out who these people were. And the way they started doing that was asking anyone who knew someone, particularly a man or a boy who disappeared from the area in the 70s, to submit a DNA sample in the hopes that there would be a match. And beyond that, they've also worked with the DNA Doe Project to try to use genetic genealogy, which we talked about in this show, to identify some of these victims. And through that process, including the Wayne Alexander case, they've identified 3 of the 8. So that leaves 5 still unidentified victims. Actually, our partner station in Minneapolis, Care 11, covered one of these other cases, and their reporter, Ivory Hecker, interviewed the family of James Byron Hawkinson, who was identified as one of Gacy's victims in 2017.
It's just awful that this is the way he died.
Lori Sisterman finally knows what happened to her 16-year-old brother, James Byron Hawkinson, or Jimmy, as she calls him. He left home for Chicago in summer 1976.
He called home and said, "I'm here. I'm fine, Mom. I'm good." You know, whatever. He called home, and then apparently that day, you know, he was murdered.
Jimmy was never heard from again, and the case went cold until several weeks ago. Lori says that's when investigators asked her and her other brother for a DNA sample. Cook County Sheriff's officials in Illinois say that sample was tested against the remains of several bodies that were found in 1978 in a crawl space beneath the home of serial murderer John Wayne Gacy. DNA tests showed strong genetic association between Jimmy's siblings and Gacy victim number 24.
Like, wow, this is really happening. My brother was murdered by this horrible man.
Wayne Alexander's case played out in a pretty similar fashion. It's ultimately through genetic genealogy that investigators slowly tracked down family members, finding some potential genetic relatives of their unidentified victim at the time, and then getting DNA samples eventually from immediate family members that confirmed what they suspected.
Reed, how's the family reacted to this news? How do they remember Wayne all these years later?
You know, this is a worst case scenario for anyone with a missing relative to find out that their loved one was killed and likely tortured by John Wayne Gacy, by this vile serial killer. And I can't begin to imagine what it's like to learn that someone that you loved suffered like that in their final moments. But that said, there's also a sense of closure that comes with this news. Carolyn Sanders told the AP that she still remembers her brother as a sensitive guy and as a jokester. They were 7 years apart in age, but she said, you know, he would have tea parties with her and that he loved her and that he loved their entire family. And in light of this news, what she said, and this is her quote, is that he suffered, but he's not suffering anymore. And the sheriff's office, in making their announcement, they shared a statement from the family in which the family said, quote, "It's hard even 45 years later to know the fate of our beloved Wayne. He was killed at the hands of a vile and evil man. Our hearts are heavy, and our sympathies go out to the other victims' families. Our only comfort is knowing that this killer no longer breathes the same air as we do. We can now lay to rest what happened and move forward by honoring Wayne." What they're referring to in that letter is that John Wayne Gacy was executed in the 90s, and then their statement is signed, "A mother who now has closure, sisters who now have closure, and brothers who now have closure."
For The Daily Crime, I'm Will Johnson, along with Reed Redmond. Thanks for listening to our show. We are here Monday through Friday with new episodes. You can also hear us on our weekly show, True Crime Chronicles. New episodes available every Monday.